It's so great to be here today. Thank you very much for making the decision to be a part of our worship here at Azalea City Church of Christ. If you're visiting with us, we want you to know we appreciate you. We're honored that you're here. We want you to come back anytime that you're available. And I am very excited about what's about to happen in the next several weeks in our family dynamic series that I'll explain more in a minute. I know Justin mentioned it as well. So we want you to be praying about that, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we get into our lesson today and introduce this series on family dynamics, I do have some good news to share with you. Been visiting with us for a while now, and they are ready to be identified with the Azalea City Church of Christ. That is Todd Glover, Michelle Brackwell, Sylvia Glover, Caleb Glover, and Scott and Debbie Glover. They are all deciding to do that today. I also want you to know that Todd and Michelle, they're going to be getting married on September the 20th. And we want to ask them if they would to please stand up. Y'all probably didn't know that part, did you? Also, Sylvia, everybody else. All right. So welcome, and we look forward to getting to know you all better. Wasn't it neat? I mean, to me, it's just so neat having our children come up here and demonstrate to us the importance of giving. Now, I understand, listen, that's not for everyone. Some children may be nervous to do that, and that's okay too. But here's what it reminds me, besides the importance and the enthusiasm they have to give, it reminds me that we have families here who are bringing their children up in the Lord. I do not necessarily believe we have a family dynamics problem here at Azalea City, but I do believe there's a family dynamics problem throughout the world we live in. You see, the dynamic of the family was designed by God. God is the creator of everything. He is the creator of the air we breathe. He is the creator of the food we eat. He's creator of everything we can fathom. And all good and all perfect gifts come from above. So therefore, the family that God created was not meant to be dysfunctional. Because God has function in everything. There's a fancy word Justin and I have learned a lot about called structural functionalism. When you look at structures, they have function. The family is a structure. It was designed. It was created. It was made by the ultimate creator in God. The question is how is the family functioning? How is the family operating? In the next several weeks, I believe you want to be here to hear, not only to worship our God, but to hear some lessons from some folks that have the desire of the family first in their heart. And I want you to know, my desire is for the family to be great. My desire is for my family to be great. My prayer for my children every day is not that they will grow up and make millions of dollars. That would just be a bonus to take care of mom and dad. But that they will be great Christians, number one. And that they will marry great Christians and live great Christian lives. That is my prayer for my children every day of my life. Now, with that said, Jason Smith, another man who not only did Jason and Heather help us tremendously with the work here, but boy, they helped our numbers when they brought their family here. They have a big family, and we're proud of their family, and we love their family. And Jason is a very good friend of mine, as is Justin. And of course, we work together and all, but Jason is a man who has a lot to say about the importance of family and priorities. A man who's lived it. And he will stand before us next week and he will talk about the priorities of the family, the way God designed it and the way God expects it. Then Justin will come the week after that. Justin is doing a tremendous job. He and Ashley and Justin has incorporated so much the family into his ministry. He is not just our youth minister. He is our youth and family minister. And with that, he's trying to strengthen the families from our little children to our teenage children on up. He is trying to help the family grow. And he will stand up and he will talk to us about the importance of family ministry. Then I'll have another week. Well, I will come up and listen, I've made a lot of mistakes. I'm not necessarily going to tell you all the ones I've made, but I've made a lot of mistakes and make a lot of mistakes daily as a father, as a husband. But there are some mistakes that we as families can't be guilty of. And I'll talk to you about the dangers of some family mistakes. And then concluded in October the 7th, that will be a day where we have a family day here. It's been a while since we've had family day, but since it's a family dynamics topic, we figure, hey, let's have a family day. And we will have Dr. Stephen Wages. Dr. Wages is the director of the Cloverdale Family Center of Family Strengths and Youth and Family Ministry. There's a long name. I can't remember it all. But anyhow, he is over that at Faulkner University. He is also a graduate professor that Justin and I have really gotten to know very well at Faulkner, and just a fine man. And I love him and I appreciate him, and he is an expert when it comes to, I mean, he has a PhD in this stuff. And so he will come and he will have Bible class. We will combine that day. We will have our worship. We'll have a meal together, and he'll have another afternoon lesson, brief information for us. But it's going to be great, but we need your prayers. But there's also some people in your community and your areas that you probably know need to be here. Let's encourage them. Let's pray for them, and let's have them here. I also am encouraged today. I'm about to get into our lesson, but I'm glad to see my friend Tanya and my friend Linda back with us this morning. I meant to say that right at the beginning, but I look over here and I love them, but keep praying for them as well. One of the first things God did for His children, He made the family. Think about it. What was Adam? Adam was lonely. Adam tried to find a helper among the animals, and he could not. And you've heard me say that before, but we're thankful for that, men. Okay? And so God formed woman, took it out of Adam's side, and made this beautiful, beautiful being. And God then joined them together. They were sitting in paradise. They were in the Garden of Eden. You want to talk about the money that is spent on weddings today and how beautiful those scenes are. And I've been a part of some very beautiful weddings. They were in the Garden of Eden, standing before God, and He joined their lives, their hearts together. But you know, we didn't pick our families, did we? Adam didn't pick Eve. God picked them, picked her for him. But we didn't pick our families. Some of you might want to trade them, but we can't, okay? We can't trade them. Out of the billions of human beings on our planet today, our families are the ones who know us best. Think about that. I know my wife. She knows me. I know my children. They know me. And listen, I'm a very transparent person. You know, I try to tell you this is me and, you know, warts and all, okay? But you don't know me like Michelle knows me. And my children know me. They are the ones who I am with. They're the ones who will cherish us. The ones that we will cherish in return. And it's easy to forget sometimes that family, besides God, besides the church, family is the most important thing in the world. That is so critical for us to remember. This could mean your mother, your father, your siblings, your spouse, your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your in-laws, or in other words, it's simply the people in your life that we should love with unconditional love. There are going to be people in your family, and there are going to be moments in your families that you are disappointed in them. I am disappointed in myself. I fail as a father way more than I want to fail. I fail as a husband way more than I want to fail. At the end of the day, I'm striving to be the best I can possibly be. But there are going to be times your children are disappointed in you. You are disappointed in your children or grandchildren or wife or husband or whomever it may be. But the bottom line is this. God worked hard to make the family strong. And we need to work hard at making the family love God. Because the devil is working hard to tear the family apart. Again, Adam and Eve, there's that beautiful scene. And there's the dynamics of it. There's the structure of it. There's the functioning of it. Remember, the number one thing they were to do as a family was procreate. Okay? They were to bring children into the world to help multiply the world. I mean, think about it. Adam, all you got to do is go pick the fruit. Eve, all you got to do is gather. God's given it all. All you got to do is bring children into this world. Pretty easy. And the devil slithered his way right into their lives, and he's been in the family ever since. Because he knew how important the family was. He slithered his way to mess it up. And if we're not careful that quickly, he can be in our families and destroy it as well. That's why we need to work so hard to make the family matter. Family matters, right? There's a play on that. There are a lot of family matters we deal with, but here's what I want you to see today. The family matters to God, and it needs to matter to us. In the Bible, Colossians chapter 3, that Dylan, young Thor? Dylan, okay. He likes young Thor too, every now and then. All right. Colossians chapter 3, verses 18 through 21. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Now, I chose Colossians. We will refer to Ephesians 5 as well, and I'm sure throughout this time those verses will be referred to. But in Colossians 3, I really like the way Paul said it to the church at Colossae. But before we dig into that, we're going to dig into that today, I want you to understand and some observations we need to be observing when it comes to our families. Here's number one. Our faith must come home with us. If our family is going to matter to God, our faith must come home with us. Listen, your children, and let me say this from the get-go, and I don't want to get too much into family ministry here and family priorities here. This may cross over some guys. That's okay, right? But Justin has something critical for your children every Sunday morning at 9 a.m., it's class. It is a time when we can bring our children, and not just Justin, but Philip and Ellen, okay, all our children education, all our teen education, our one-to-one education, all these things matter. And listen, when we do not come, we've got to work that much harder on our faith. It is important to build our faith. Our faith must come home with us because already 4 hours a week is what we spend. Okay? We've got 3 hours on Sunday morning and we've got one on Wednesday night. 4 hours together is not enough to get our children's faith and our faith where it needs to be. We can't spend 164 hours of a 168-hour week not talking about God and expect the family to matter and God to matter. If Jesus is truly supreme in our lives, then it should show in how we relate to the members of our family. We must talk about God from the going down to the rising up. It's Deuteronomy 6. One of the greatest examples of family ministry I can think of. We must talk about God all the time. God must be first in our lives. Number two, observation. The issue is function, not inferiority. What do you mean by that, Terry? Individual roles matter in each individual family. These are dynamics of the family. Individual roles matter in each individual family. For instance, the husband and wife are equal. They are one. Remember that. Man, woman, the two become one. They are equal. They are one before God. But note this, they each have different roles that must be done by each of them if the family is going to function properly. If I had some type of mechanical device before you, okay, if it was some type of engine, okay, let's picture an engine, and Brother Kevin and Johnny and so many others could talk better about this than me, but there's a lot of integral parts in that engine, okay, in that motor. And if one of them is down, it does not function the way it is supposed to function. If one husband is not functioning the way he should, if one father is not functioning the way he should, or one mother or wife, then we have a problem in the family. And the issue becomes function. It's not about inferiority. It's not about who's in charge. It's about obeying the function of the structure that God designed. Number three, observation. Relationships are meant to be reciprocal. Relationships are meant to be reciprocal. What do you mean by that, Terry? I mean, husbands are to love their wives unconditionally. This reciprocal response to that is this. Wives submit to the husbands. Wives submit to Christ. Wives submit to husbands. Husbands love unconditionally. They go hand in hand. That is reciprocal. That is the way it's supposed to be. Fathers are not to provoke their children to sin and to wrath. Children are to obey their parents in the Lord, for this is right. That's relationship. That's reciprocal. That's the way God designed it. That's how family matters. Number four. Families need help today. We need to understand that observation. The family is under fire. The home life in some places is literally crumbling before their very eyes. Since the very institution that God founded was the family, the very first institution, we need to listen and apply what He has to say to make that function, that family function better. If we ignore what God says, we do so at our own risk. You know, you can drive down a road where the bridge is out and ignore the warning signs. I'm telling you, I love you enough to tell you the truth. If you have every right and every responsibility to go down a closed road and the bridge is out and drive down that road and ignore those signs that say danger, road closed. That is your responsibility, but I wouldn't advise it. It's the same with the family. You have every right to ignore what I'm going to say, what Jason's going to say, what Justin's going to say, what Dr. Wage is going to say, mainly what God is going to say. You have every right to ignore it, but I would not advise it. God gave us structure. He gave us a plan. And it doesn't matter if your family is dysfunctional this very moment. It can function properly again. But we've got to trust God. We must make the family matter because I'm telling you, it matters to God. Got to understand some things if the family's going to matter. These are real important, folks. This is critical stuff. I'm not standing up here to talk about this. I didn't, have a desire to write a book. And again, I'm not trying to say, I give you these books. I don't care about that. I wrote the book because I saw the dangers of family. I was a youth minister for 14 years. I taught school for 10 years. It's not gotten better. It's gotten worse. And I saw the danger and the splinter and the struggle and the warning signs in the family. And where is it coming to? It's coming to the church. But there are things being ignored. And we're saying it doesn't matter anymore, God. But it matters to God. And so I want you to know, at risk of people writing me up in today's day and time, and I recognize the area we live in and the time we live in, and I know some of the things I'm about to say in the world is not going to be very popular, but I didn't say them, God did. And we need to listen to this. The Bible views marriage as a partnership. Each partner fills different roles. Now, this is God's plan for marriage. Okay? Colossians 3:18. We read it three times now. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. We are in the middle of a woman's movement in the United States of America. And let me tell you something. I am 100% on board for women's rights. I'm 100% on board for women being able to accomplish whatever they want. I'm 100% on board for wives making as much money. I wish my wife made a lot of money. Okay? I do. I am all on board for that. But there are certain things we can't get so caught up in society with that we lose sight about what God planned. And that's happening. It is carrying over and having a diverse effect. We want to be more for God, then we've got to obey God. Okay? Let's clear up a few things about wives submit to your husbands that some may struggle with. Nowadays, we hear that this shouldn't be the way it is. But I want you to understand the way this verse is written. Nowhere does it say that a wife is to obey her husband. It says, wives, submit to your husbands. Children are to obey in verse 20. Slaves are to obey in verse 22. But wives are to submit. There is a difference. This passage has application to wives in a marriage relationship, not to women in general. In other words, it didn't say women obey every man or submit to every man out there. It's talking about the partnership of a marriage. Husbands and wives are both to submit to the Lord and to each other, Ephesians 5:21, submitting to one another in the fear of God. The concept of submission is taught in many places in the Bible. And never does that word submission imply slavery or inferiority. The Greek word means to arrange oneself under a delegated authority. It comes from the military word where soldiers were to be in order under the direction of their officer. In the home, in other words, the wife is to submit to the delegated authority of her husband. The reason for the submission is found at the end of verse 18. Because it's fitting to the Lord. Another translation puts it this way. This is what the Lord has planned for you. A wife is to submit to her husband out of the same allegiance she shows to Jesus Christ. This is not a cultural suggestion. I've heard that before. Well, that was just the times. That was back then. It's not a cultural suggestion. It represents God's sense of order in the marital relationship. That's how He set it up at the very beginning, as it's written in 1 Timothy 2, verse 13. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. Submission carries the idea of entrusting oneself to the leadership of another to accomplish a task. Do you hear that? I'm going to say it again. Submission carries the idea of entrusting oneself to the leadership of another to accomplish a task. There is a task involved. When Adam was formed and Eve was formed and God formed them together, there was a task. The task was to be the family and was to populate the earth. When a Christian woman is submitted to the Lord and to her own husband, she will experience a release and fulfillment that can come no other way. The end result will be an environment of intimacy, growth, and a ministry partnership that will make a difference in the family and in the world. Hey guys, I'm not done. Husbands, we have a role. We have a function. And God laid it out there in verse 19. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Throughout the Bible, God says more about the quality of the husband's leadership than He does about the wife's submission. Bad marriages are usually the result of the husband's inability to love his wife instead of the wife's refusal to be submissive. The relationships that go bad is usually the husband not loving the way he should instead of the wife submitting the way she should. That's statistics. I have yet to meet a wife who would not be willing to follow the leadership of a man who loves her unconditionally. The word husband originally meant one who holds the house together. Another image of husband should be the house, that of a gardener who cultivates the soil and keeps the weeds out. You know, gardening, it takes a lot of work. You got to cultivate the soil, you got to plant the seed, but you got to keep the weeds out. That's the idea of the husband. Husbands, our responsibility is to love our wives by holding things together and providing an atmosphere for growth and fruitfulness in our homes. In Ephesians 5, Paul teaches us that we're to love our wives in the same way that Christ loves the church. The word is agape. When I counsel with couples, and I'm just going to tell you, men and women are different, if you hadn't figured that out yet. There are a lot of things I could say, and maybe at another time we will say them. But let me just say this. Men are primarily made physical attraction. Women are primarily made to be emotionally attracted. Okay? Hear me out. That doesn't mean men does not have an emotional side and women doesn't have a physical side. But God designed, and it's beautifully displayed, and the devil knows that too, by the way, in Genesis 3. Eve had to be emotionally convinced that it was okay to eat the fruit. Adam was, see fruit, eat fruit. It was physical. Fill my belly. Get in my belly. Okay? Eve was emotionally convinced. Well, it's the same that is said in the relationship. Husbands, men are primarily made physical. Women are primarily made emotional. Now, when I counsel with young couples that are about to get married, the man, when he hears love, has eros in mind. The woman does not, most of the time. Let me say this. When he says, husbands, love your wives, the word is not eros. The word is agape. The word eros is not found. Men, don't think that's disappointing, because here's the way God works. When we agape love our wives, and the wives submit to the husbands, then agape love is there, phileo love is there, eros love is there. And it's a beautiful function to the marriage partnership. It literally means, at the end of this, when he says, husbands, do not be harsh with your wives. Do not produce a bitter taste. We should not ever be bitter towards our sweeties. Right? There's another part to this, though, when it comes to functioning of our family, and it's parenting. I never promised you you're getting out on time today. I don't know what out on time is. Okay? I'm giving up the next two Sundays, so forgive me. God's principles for parenting. Okay? In Colossians 3, Paul addresses the relationship between children and parents in verses 20 and 21. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Now the kids are going to start squirming. Husbands and wives have been squirming. Children have a duty to listen and carry out the instructions of their parents without rolling your eyes, without snatching, without storming off. We are to obey our parents. My mom and dad are still here, and I am 41 years old. If they called me and said, son, I need you to do this, I'm going to do it. I'm just telling you, that's how much they instilled it in me. And that's what I owe them. It's important for us to do that. But it's also important to understand when it says, obey your parents, the verb is in the present tense, indicating that such action is to be ongoing. They're all taking good notes up here, moms and dads, I'm sure. When a child obeys his or her parents in the Lord, guess what happens? The Lord is pleased. So when your parents tell you, hey, today we're going to clean house. Hey, today we're going to cut grass. Hey, today we're going to do whatever. And you're like, yes, sir. I'm so excited about this. I couldn't wait for you to tell me we were going to spend all day Saturday cleaning house and cutting grass. God just smiles. He just smiles. He's pleased. Obedience brings God's pleasure and comes with God's promise. As children, we must understand that importance. However, parents, we've got to take serious the responsibility of training children to obey. We need to be engaged and encouraging, but we also must expect obedience. My children, and you notice I haven't told as many Bo and Madeline stories. They're getting to an age where that really gets old with them. But my children know this, because I've looked them in the face and told them, God didn't give me you to be your best friend. I'm your daddy. Now that doesn't mean I do not desire a relationship with them. But at the end of the day, I expect obedience. I don't want it to be an afterthought. I don't want it to be a bonus. It's an expectation. And when they do not reach that expectation, my children know it. Now, there may be times when I am unjust in some of it, but it's reality. We must expect obedience. Now, we've got to teach it. We've got to cultivate it. We've got to help it, but we've got to expect it. We need to be engaged in their lives, but we cannot just rule their lives. What does that mean? There means there has to be a balance. They're going to make decisions. Now, if we expect certain things and they understand that, then I believe it helps with disappointment along the way. Colossians 3:21 gives us this. As fathers, it's an awesome responsibility, by the way. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. What does that mean? That means we've got to do our jobs as fathers. Now, the Greek does imply here, if you look at it in the Greek, that mothers have a role in this. But this command is directly to us fathers. I'm just going to tell you, as much as my parents, and, you know, I'd love to sit here and tell you, I was a perfect child, I was not. I got in trouble, not as much as Toby and Todd, because I learned from them. But I got in trouble. But I think all three of us boys would tell you, if it wasn't for Dad, we needed Mom, but if Dad wasn't there, who knows if we'd all be faithful Christians today. It's important. Both roles are important. So dads, don't think it's Mom's responsibility to get them here to Sunday school. We need you. We need us all. That's God's structure. That's God's plan for marriage and parenting. Now, I want to close out with some things that we need to be aware of. We're going to make the family matter. There's some language, some words, and I don't mean it the way you think it probably, but there are some things that we need to be careful of. I'm going to close with these four. These four words will help us to make the family matter and function properly. The first word we need to get out and understand that we can't be a part of is the word ignore. I was involved in somebody's life a long time ago now, over 20 years ago, where the husband and wife did not divorce one another, but they hated one another. They had three children in their home, two girls and a boy. They did not believe in divorce. They didn't believe they should divorce, but folks, in all definitions of it except signing the papers, they were divorced. They did not sleep in the same bed. They did not talk to one another. And you know what? In all this, where they got wrapped so much up in themselves, the husband ignored the wife ignored the husband, and they ignored the children. Guess what happens when we ignore? They're going to get our attention one way or the other. Both of the girls got pregnant out of wedlock. Both of them got on drugs, and so did the son. You know what they were doing? They were getting their mom and dad's attention. But mom and dad were ignoring it. I have no idea where those families turned out. I lost touch with them. But the bottom line is this. Ignore cannot happen. Husbands cannot ignore wives. Wives cannot ignore husbands. You cannot ignore your children. And your children do not need to ignore you. That means we've got to do some things. And we'll talk more about what we can do to get that out of our system. Second word we need to be mindful of is the word indulge. We live in a time when indulging is everywhere. Burger King said it first, I guess, maybe best. Have it your way. I'm going to tell you right now, when we let our husbands have it always their way, and we let manipulation come into the relationship. Oh, if you love me, you'll let me do this. You'll buy me this, or let the wives do that too. And when we do those things, that is danger, danger, danger. That is the warning signs going up. Or when it comes to our children, oh, they're going to cry, let's just buy them this toy. No, we've taught them the worst lesson possible. We indulge them. That's not the function of the family, to give them anything they want. You see, terrible twos are terrible because for 2 years of the life, the kid has cried and we've done it. And I understand that. But at two, we start, or even before then, right? Terrible twos and ones, whatever they are. But even before that, we're like, no, no, no. Well, they start crying out because they've never heard no. They don't know what to do. Well, sometimes we don't get out of those terrible twos. And that can be very detrimental to a family. The third word, insult. Tearing one another down is terrible. It's kind of that mentality I've heard people, somebody will say, don't talk about, you talk about my wife, we're going to fight, whatever. But I've, and then they go and run them down. I mean, how? Why? Why would we insult one another? Why would we bash the one who is part of our life behind their back to our friends or whatever? This is the worst thing we can do. And insulting our children. Children insulting us. That's offensive language, and we got to get it out. Final word. Intimidate. I am 100% certain I intimidate my children. I want them to respect me, but I have a big voice. I can lift a lot of weight. And I think they get intimidated. I want them to fear me. I want them to respect me, but I want them to not be scared of me. And there is a difference. There's a difference. And we've got to be careful. I'm telling you, I'm preaching to myself. These words step all over my toes sometimes. And I've got to be careful. But I'm going to close out with this. Little quiz, little test. Where are you in your family? Number one. Six personal questions. Do I love my wife? Or do I respect and submit to my husband the way God intends me to do it? It's yes or no. Number two, do I believe that my children are not mine, but rather a gift from God entrusted to me? Number three, am I partnering with God to enable my children to become the men and women He intends them to be? Number four, do they know how delighted and excited I am about them? Number five, am I living under the leadership of Christ in my life so that my family will have a model to follow? And number six, am I calling my children to obedience and providing correct guidance and discipline that is both firm and fair? The family matters. The best thing we can do for the family is marry Jesus Christ. When we marry Jesus Christ, it is not a, hey, let's get out of this relationship anytime we want. It's a lifetime commitment. It's putting the cross in the ground and centering and revolving around that cross. Today, does your family matter? Does it matter enough to you that if you are living a life that is wrong, you will make it right today? I can't see a greater scene than for a mom or dad or a child that's of age to walk this aisle and say, today is the day I'm ready to change my life and my family. I want to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. or I need to come home and make things right. You have that opportunity right now as together we stand and sing.